Blog Talk Radio.
If it's smooth jazz, then the Jazz Queen and Mike Reynolds are talking about it on Talking Smooth Jazz, your place for all things smooth. Artist.
Hello, Brian. Welcome to Talking Smooth Jazz.
Hello there.
Bonnie James, welcome to Talking Smooth Jazz.
Thanks so much. It's great to be with you guys.
Layla, thank you so much for coming onto the show.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Music.
This is the Jazz Queen with the Smooth Jazz News Minute.
With the smoothest show on internet radio, your hosts, the Jazz Queen and Mike Reynolds.
Hello and welcome to Talking Smooth Jazz. This is Terry, a.k.a. the Jazz Queen. How is everyone doing? Mike, how are you? Mike? Okay, I seem to be having some problems with the volume. Okay, let's see. Can you guys in the chat room hear me? Okay. Mike, I can't hear you if you're talking, so you may have to call back in. All right. Well, okay, so the chat room can hear me, but it seems like Mike on the switchboard cannot hear me. So, Mike, we'll need you to call back in if you can hear me. And I am going to – Mike is not – okay. All right. Well, Mike, if you can hear me, I cannot hear you if you're talking. So you might have to call back in. All right. All right. So I'm going to do that. We're still waiting on Stanley Clark to call in, so I think what I'm going to do as well is hang up and call back in and see if that works. So hang on one moment, and I will be right back. Mike, can you hear me? Mike, are you there? Okay, I seem to be having some issues with the volume of all nights. Why tonight? Okay, let me know that you can hear me in the chat room, everyone, please, and I'm trying to work this out here. In the meantime, I will play one of a song from Stanley Clark's new CD. It's called The Stanley Clark Band, and this is called Labyrinth. All right, my music won't play either. Oh, wow. Of course not. All right, hold on one moment. We're working this out. All right. Mike, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Okay, yes. All right. All right. All right, I don't know what happened there, but Mike is back now, and we are waiting. I think Stanley called in earlier, but I couldn't hear him either. So what I'm going to do is play Labyrinth and give his manager a call and see if we can get him on the phone. Again, from his brand-new CD, The Stanley Clark Band, this is Labyrinth. right. That was brand new music from Stanley Clark's brand new CD called The Stanley Clark Band. The name of that song was Labyrinth. I have talked to Stanley's manager, and he should be calling me back shortly. But let me go ahead and welcome those of you in the chat room, Al Winters, Andrew Harris, Anisha, Bonnie Fan, Carol, The Guest, Jazzy Chick, Joy Keys, Lori, Muse U, Seeing Heart, and Tony Exum Jr. Welcome everyone to the chat room. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. If you would like to join us in the chat room, you can go to TalkingSmoothJazz.com, click on the TSJ Radio Show page, and then the Play Chat button underneath the Stanley Clark Show. You can also speak when Stanley called in. I will be taking phone calls for him at 646-716-5485, 646-716-5485. So let me just read off some stats about Mr. Clark, because when I was doing my research on him, very, very impressive information on him. Stanley Clark was the first bassist in history to headline tours, selling out shows worldwide, and have his album certified gold. He was the first bassist in history to double on acoustic and electric guitar, the first musician to pop over chord changes. His School Days album is one of the most influential solo bass recordings in fusion history. He invented the piccolo bass and the tenor bass. The word legend was used to describe Stanley by the time he was 25 years old. The group Return to Forever recorded 8 albums, 2 certified gold, The Hymn of the Seventh Galaxy and Romantic Warrior. He won an Emmy nomination for his score for Pee-wee's Playhouse. He is currently scoring the ABC Family Channel series Lincoln Heights, and he also wrote the show's theme song. He has become one of the elite in-demand composers in Hollywood, and he was honored with the Key to the City of Philadelphia. His awards and nominations include 1 Grammy Award for the album No Mystery, 7 Grammy nominations, 3 Emmy nominations, was Rolling Stone's first Jazz Man of the Year, won Playboy's Music Award for Best Bassist 10 years straight, was named one of Los Angeles Magazine's top 50 most influential people in 2004, and was Bass Player Magazine's 2006 Lifetime Achievement Award honoree. The group Trio with Bella Fleck and Jean-Luc Ponty was nominated for a 2006 Relics Jammy Award in the category of Tour of the Year. He won the BMI Film Music Award for Oscar-nominated film Boys in the Hood, and he is a member of Guitar Player Magazine's Gallery of Greats. His television and film credits include Pee-wee's Playhouse, Boys in the Hood, What's Love Got to Do with It, Passenger 57, Higher Learning, Poetic Justice, Panther, The Five Heartbeats, Romeo Must Die, Little Big League, Showtime's Soul Food, and he scored Michael Jackson's video release, Remember the Time. And let me tell you, I mean, I could go on and on and on. That's just some of Stanley's credits in television and TV scoring credits and his awards. This man is, at 25, he was considered a legend. So he has done so much.
Yeah, really.
In his lifetime. So let me bring on Mr. Clark right now. Stanley
Hello.
Clark, welcome to the show. Hi.
Hello, I'm fine. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for joining us.
Yes. And so what's happening? Where are you?
I am in Las Vegas.
Hey, all right.
Yes.
My town. All right.
Yes. My cool. name is Terry, and let me introduce you to my co-host, Mike Reynolds.
Hey, Mike.
How are you today?
Good.
I just read off a list of your credits and your awards and nominations, all of your stats. And look, that was a short list.
Right.
That was a short list. So you are such we are so honored to have you on the show. We really, really are honored to have you on the show.
Yeah, that list will make you tired. I get tired when I hear it. Golly.
Oh, you do?
If I did all that, I should be dead.
You have done so much. You have done so much for bases worldwide, and your credits and all of this speaks, you know, to you as a professional in this business. Now, you started in the business in 1971, so that makes you 39 years old in the business.
Yeah, I mean, actually, to be honest, that's in the business that I guess where, you know, a lot of recognition was a part of it. But actually, I started playing professionally, like, in probably 68, 69. Like, I graduated from high school in 68, and I was right away, even though I went to college, in the summers, I went to New York, and I was hitting it right away, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, what I would like to do is go back to your high school when you first picked up the bass. And
right.
Could you share the story about how that happened?
Well, I think I was about 12 or 13 years old, and, you know, there was an announcement that anybody that was interested in playing music, there were instruments in this room, and all the kids that had interest would show up. So, you know, I was also kind of big into sports at that time, and I don't know, I was kind of messing around, and I got there late, and the only thing that was left was a big sousaphone, a bass drum, and an acoustic bass in the corner. And I definitely wasn't going to be marching around with a sousaphone and like in a marching band, one of those big, huge things, and carrying the bass drum, definitely not. But the bass was there, and I thought it was interesting. It had a really nasty sound, and I just thought, you know, I guess it started my sort of life journey with trying to make the bass sound beautiful, you know. So it was from that day on, that's what I've always tried to do, is make the bass sound the best that it can. And it started there because it was a pretty nasty instrument that I got, and I spent a lot of time really working with it and practicing, just trying to get it to sound good, you know.
Okay. Now, you also attended the Philadelphia Academy of Music,
mm-hmm.
Which is now called the University of Fine Arts. And in 2008,
right.
You were presented with a doctorate in fine arts from this school.
Oh, yeah.
So let me congratulate you on that.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You know, I'll fill out any prescriptions or whatever, you know. But, yeah, that was a wild thing, you know, because when they called me to do that, I guess I had just forgotten about it. I'd never really been to one of those ceremonies before. And I got there. It was pretty big deal because our school had this affiliation with Harvard, so there were some people that came down, and it was, you know, they did it real old school, like I thought I was in England or something. I mean, it was like they had us wear the, you know, the cap and the gown, and then you march down the main street, you know, with, you know, like it had to be like 100 people with gowns, and they got plaques and symbols and this, and they literally stopped in the middle of Philadelphia, there's a street, Broad Street, they kind of stopped traffic there. It was pretty... I was embarrassed, but it was really something. It was a much bigger deal than I guess I had thought. I'm thank God I had a speech, you know, and it was really touching. It was nice to get something, you know, from the school. I mean, I spent a lot of time there, and you know, I spent a lot of time teaching people music even after I left the school, along with doing my career. I mean, I still teach today. And so I think, you know, they knew that was kind of a big thing for me. And so I was, you know, I was very thankful, very grateful that they, you know, bestowed me with this award, you know, so it was nice.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Now, your entertainment group, Roxborough, you guys also offer scholarships to students that are in financial need that excel
Absolutely.
In music. So you are a big advocate of music in schools and everything. Yeah.
I really believe that, you know, like music in schools and also music, in your life. I kind of come from one of those neighborhoods. I lived in this neighborhood in Philadelphia that was kind of, it was old fashioned in a lot of ways. It's like everybody had a piano in their house, and you know, the idea of music was not like it sort of is today. You take up an instrument with hopes to make a lot of money, get rich, big car, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I come from the time where music was something that you had as a part of your family structure, that everybody sang, or, you know, and it was, you know, and if you were connected with the church, that was a big deal. It was just something that enriched your life. It really didn't have much to do with money at all. It was just something, you know, that's a part of you. And I really recommend that a lot for families just in general, or just, you know, anybody that has kids, you know, give them music lessons. It's been proven that people that study music, they excel in math and some other subjects too. You know, it's just the way your mind has to line up in order to do music. It tends to make other things easier, you know. So you know, we started this scholarship program about 10 years ago. This is our 11th year. And we've given scholarships for kids for, you know, for 10 going on 11 years. And 1 year, our biggest year that we had was a year that I sort of put on this musical event every year where the kids, through a process of elimination, it ends up with, like, you know, 10 different bands or musical things. Like it could be a guy playing a drum solo, it could be someone singing, or a rapper, or it could be a group, it could be whatever. And we give awards, we also give, you know, cash awards, scholarship awards, we give all sorts of things. And it's been a nice thing. You know, we have celebrity judges. You know, 1 year we had Stevie Wonder, Flea from the Hot Chili Peppers, Sheila E., Sinbad was the MC. That's actually out on a DVD. It was a great, great time. We raised a lot of money. We actually gave a scholarship to someone in Israel, someone in India to come over here. You know, so it's a thing that I've been doing quietly. I don't like to really toot my horn too much. I don't think you should with those kind of things. But it's, you know, I'm happy that, you know, people are starting to find out about it. And we're going to do it for this year. We're actually going to do the event in January. So it's just the timing. That's kind of how it is. And I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. Now, you mentioned the DVD. It's called Night School, An Evening with Stanley Clark and Friends. Tell us about that.
Well, that was fun. You know, that was actually, it was me, a lawyer friend of mine, and two other guys put that together. And that was like, wow, boy, that almost killed me, man. I tell you, just trying to reach Stevie Wonder's people alone. It was great, you know, because it's you know, when you have all those people, you know, me being an artist, I wanted to make sure everyone was treated properly and taken care of, and those things are usually, you know, a one night affair, so, you know, they're not necessarily as organized as they could be, you know, but everyone had a great spirit. You know, the spirit was basically for the kids. And it was a great thing. We had a nice thing. Stevie really surprised everyone when he came in, and he sang a nice piece. And it was nice because it's really interesting. A lot of people, you know, he's like a national treasure, Stevie Wonder, and a lot of people have never, ever, ever saw Stevie play live. So it was really interesting when he was up on the stage playing, like people realizing, wow, this is Stevie Wonder. There was a lot of tears. Some people were tearing up a little bit because they had never seen Stevie. You know, Stevie doesn't perform that much, these days. So it was a very beautiful thing. I was very happy. You know, Sheila E. was very gracious to us, and Bela Fleck was there. Flea from the Hot Chili Peppers came, and Stuart Copeland from the Police came and played drums, and Sinbad was funny as hell, you know, jokes.
Yes.
I mean, he did the emceeing, and it was just funny. Marcus Miller was there. I had a thing where we had like 8 or 9 bass players all playing my song School Days all at the same time, and it was just a lot of fun. And the kids loved it, and we gave some money away to some kids, and it was great. It was a great, great night.
Oh, good. Now, I would like to go back to your days at Philadelphia Academy of Music. How did that time shape your music career?
Well, you know, it was, I was fortunate. Before I went to the Philadelphia Musical Academy, my mother enrolled me in this school, which they still have in Philadelphia. It's called the Settlement School System. And basically, it was a school that was put together by private money, people that were interested in the arts. And it looked like you were going to school in the 1800s or 1700s or something. It was like really old Philadelphia. You walked in this place, white gloves, the whole bit. It was very little nose up in the air for me, but as a kid, because I was wild, I came in there with a big old afro. I was crazy. But I had amazing teachers, and they saw that the teachers could see that I had some talent. And so I came there, and I had a really straight, tremendous classical music background. And a lot of the teachers that taught there, you know, were from the Philadelphia Orchestra. And so I had those kind of studies, and along with that, just that kind of work ethic, you know, just like really getting it together. So when I got to the Philadelphia Musical Academy, that was kind of like an extension of what I did when I was younger. That was one of the really beautiful things about Philadelphia. And matter of fact, just the arts in this country back then, coming out of the 60s, going into the 70s, things just kind of, I think it was right around the time Ronald Reagan became president, and they started cutting a lot of music programs and things having to do with the arts, and then it sort of changed, you know. But I was very fortunate that when I came up, that was there, and there were a lot of kids that benefited from that. I have friends today that were like in the orchestra with me, you know, who are now doctors, lawyers, politicians, what have you. But they remember our time in the orchestra, the choir, the band, and, you know, what have you. I really think it's, you know, when I hear today in sort of the political dialogue, when I hear the possibility of, you know, more cuts in the arts, it really, it's really disturbing to me, because it's very important in society that young people have an understanding of the arts, but the full arts, not just, you know, whatever they're throwing out there. If they have, you know, whoever's at the top of the charts, if that's all you see, you don't, you know, the kids don't have a background, because culture, in order to say that you have culture, there's a component of history there. You have to be able to understand history, what's come before you. It doesn't even necessarily mean you have to like it that much, but at least know it was there. It's important for kids to know that Miles Davis was there, Louis Armstrong, Count Basie, Ella Fitzgerald, you know, all the people that were there that laid the foundation for later people. And, you know, and nowadays, you know, just getting someone to remember Luther Vandross that's under 20 is tough. anyway, that's my spiel there, you know.
Is that why you became an educator? Is that why you decided to start teaching?
Yeah. Like, I have what I like to do, I tend to sway away from older students. I like students that come to me that don't know anything, nothing. That's a harder student to teach for many reasons, but I tend to excel at that because for some reason I feel more in line with that person, because I know someone like that is reaching out for something. You know, it's natural for any person. You know, we as human beings, we want things. We want to get better. We want, you know, to experience new things. It's natural for us. That's why when we hear things that are fresh, whether it's in music or art or even sports, just someone that has something that's different, it makes us all, our eyes open and go, wow, because that's a natural thing that we like. And it's just, with kids, you just have to present it properly. You can't bang it over their heads. You can't, you know, say you have to learn this and all that. You just lay it out there and say, yeah, that guy did this. And that's it. Because they're like sponges. It goes in, and it stays there. You don't have to bang it in. And I have a lot of my older students. I will never mention their names, but there's a lot of people, if you know much about bass players and people that play instrumental music, I have a lot of students out there that I've taught from the very beginning. And they're out there doing well, making money, and, you know, they call me and, you know, and all that sort of stuff. And it's great. That's actually what I'd like to do, you know, all the time, you know, probably many years from now when I slow down a bit.
Wow, that's cool. Now you've just released this new CD that you have coming out, the Stanley Clark Band.
Yeah.
You just came off of doing the SMV thing with Marcus Miller and Victor Wooten.
Absolutely.
So why did you decide to start, and why did you decide to go into this project right now?
Well, just, you know, I'm the kind of guy, just, you know, like we did the SMV thing. That was really a lot of fun, 2 years of touring. You know, Victor Wooten has been talking about doing this for a long time. I have to really credit him with the idea. And he's been calling me and Marcus for a long time. And I used to see Marcus in L.A., and Marcus used to say, hey, man, you think we should do it, man? You know, Little Vic is crazy, you know, man. We'll get down there with three basses. I said, well, I don't know. Let's try it out, you know. And what happened was it kind of started by accident. I was receiving this Lifetime Achievement Award from Bass Player Magazine, and they had this event in New York. Thousands of bass players came. Every old bass players around the world came in for this event. So what happened was they gave me the award, and the guy that gave me the award said, why don't you play something? Play your, you know, kind of the piece that people associate me with is this song called School Days. So I said, well, yeah, let's do it. And Victor and Marcus were handing me the awards, you know, because they were presenting me, because I go way back. I met Victor when he was 7. I met Marcus when he was 14. He looked like a pencil, could hardly hold a bass. And so they handed me this award, and I said, why don't the three of us play it? And so we played it, and everybody was videoing and all that stuff, and they put it all on YouTube. And we have something like close to 2 million views of this thing. If you go up, like, and check out Wooten, Clark, and Miller, you see us playing this thing, and it's like so many people check this thing out. So, and some promoters said, man, you guys should go out on the road. And so we put a band together, we made a record, and we went out, and we had the best time. It was so much fun. And there was something that was really refreshing and new. Like in Europe, they just didn't have enough room to fill up some places, you know, because there were so many people that just wanted to, because it was so unusual. And so we did that for 2 years, and then we stopped, and then, you know, we're all musicians, you know, you just move on to the next thing. So I moved on to the next thing, and hence that's sort of where this album came from. And, you know, it's like music is, to me, it's a mission, you know. I'm constantly moving forward, and that's the way it is, you know.
Mm. Well, we're going to play a couple of songs from the CD, but I have a phone call for you first. Area code 937. Welcome to Talking Smooth Jazz.
Yes, thanks for taking my call, Terry. This is Daryl.
Hi, Daryl.
I just I just want to say to Stanley, hello there. How you doing, man?
Very good, man. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling good. When I found out that you were going to be on with Terry, I said I have to call because I probably haven't seen you for 40 years.
Wow.
Yeah, it's going all the way back to Mrs. Brown's house with Daryl Brown and Cardi and everybody.
Wow, well, I was just talking to Daryl. You know, Daryl's a doctor right now.
Yeah,
you know that?
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah, I talked to Cardi a little while ago. You might remember my brother a little better than me. I was a young one around. My brother was K Jr., the keyboard player.
Oh, yeah. I remember you, too. You were,
okay.
You were young hanging around.
Yeah. I was a real young one hanging out with you guys,
right,
man. But I just
right,
wanted
I
to thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to thank you, man, for all of the inspiration that you've given me over the years.
Good.
And just say keep doing it, man. I'm looking forward to getting your new project.
Okay, man. Hey, you take care of yourself and tell all the fellas back there that are still around that, you know, still happening.
Yeah, I definitely will, right, man. It's
all
good
right,
talking to you, Stanley. All right, man.
Okay, man. Cool.
Well, thank you, Daryl.
Okay, thanks.
All right. Okay, we are talking to bassist Stanley Clark. If you would like to speak with him, please give us a call at 646-716-5485. He has a brand new CD out called The Stanley Clark Band. And Stanley, we've already played one song, Labyrinth. I'm going to
great,
play the next song, which is Here's Why Tears Drive. Tell me about this
great,
one.
Well, that's an interesting song. My daughter had broken up with her boyfriend after many years.
Oh.
And she was in the house all crying and upset. She'll kill me for saying this, but, you know, so, and she came to me for, like, you know, counsel, you know. And, you know, it's a hard thing, you know, at that young age, you know. And she just, so I said, I'm going to write a song for this whole feeling you have. So I wrote this song, and I said, I just thought I'd call it Here's Why Tears Dry. And she likes it, but she has a sense of humor. And underneath the tune, it says, Here's Why Tears Dry. It says, because they evaporate. and that's her line. As I told her, I said, you know, you're going to meet many other boys, and you're beautiful. Don't worry about it. Don't kill yourself over this. And that was it.
Okay. Well, from Stanley Clark's brand new CD, The Stanley Clark Band, this is Here's Why Tears Dry.
Thank you.
All right. That was from Stanley Clark's brand new CD, The Stanley Clark Band, and that was called Here's Why Tears Dry. If you would like to speak to Stanley, please give us a call at 646-716-5485. I would like to read a review from jazzhq.com, and they say that Stanley is to the electric bass what Jimi Hendrix was to the electric guitar, an unparalleled virtuoso who sets the standard for others to follow even as they create their own legacies. Stanley, question.
Mm-hmm.
What advice would you give to upcoming bassists, particularly bassists?
You know, the bass has changed so much. I think out of all the instruments in, I'll say, jazz and contemporary music, the bass has made the most strides, you know, it from being, like, especially in the last 25 years, from pretty much being a background instrument to, I mean, you know, you have all kinds of people that have made great records. I mean, like Wayman Tisdale, you know, Marcus, Victor, all those guys. I mean, I remember when I met Wayman, used to, whenever he came out to L.A. to play the Lakers, he used to come by. And this will show you how far back this is. He used to bring me a cassette of his music. And I used to try to talk him out of it. I'd say, man, you know, basketball, forget the bass, man, basketball. And he used to say, no, man, no, like, I'm going to play. And I have so much respect for him because here's a guy so focused that he decided what he was going to do, and he did it. He became a professional bass player, lead bass player, and took it where he took it, you know, before he passed and you know, made a living. That was his job. That's what he did. And you know, I really, really have a lot of respect for him. And you know, I would say to a lot of the guys that are out there that are bass players, I mean, you know, just, you know, really learn the instrument and figure out where you want to be in the, you know, as far as a bass player. Like, there's some bass players that maybe just want to play in a band. Some bass players want to have their own band. Some bass players want to do both. Some want to play acoustic. Some want to play electric. It's you know, the bass is not necessarily a, you know, a monolithic instrument anymore. There's more sides to it, and there's more people nowadays making records as bass players, making CDs all over the world, in Europe, you know, in Asia. I remember when me, Marcus, and Victor, we played in Korea, and we played in this kind of a mid-sized theater, about 2,000 seats, 2,500 seats, something like that. And at the end of the show, we were signing autographs, and I kid you not, 1,000 guys came with their basses. And they had them on their backs. You know, they have these new, like, ways of carrying the basses, like their backpacks, you know. And it looked like real surreal. It looked like a Fellini movie or something, like 1,000 guys holding basses, and they're all Korean. We were sitting there going, oh, my God, what have we started here? But it was, you know, it's a new day for a bass player. It's a great time to be a bass player. This is the best time ever because it's open, it's wide open. A lot of guys, you know, from my time have, you know, opened the doors, and then many guys that came after me are continually kicking the door down. But the door is open. I mean, the bass is purely liberated now. It's like it's wide open, whatever you want to do, you know, with it.
Okay. I have a phone call for you. Area code 719. Welcome to Talking Smooth Jazz.
Hi, Terry. This is Tony X.
Hey.
Hi. Hi, Tony.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I wanted to ask him a question about a certain saxophone player that he worked with.
About what? Say that again.
So I wanted to ask you, Stanley, what was it like working with the great George Howard?
Well, you know, George, the thing that I loved about George is that, see, I grew up with his sister. When I played in Philadelphia, I used to play in this orchestra called the All Philadelphia Orchestra, which had the All Philadelphia High School Orchestra, which had all the best players from all the high schools. and his sister Mary Howard was a tremendous classical acoustic bass player. You know, like
wow.
Tremendous. Yeah. Like a lot of people don't know, just tremendous. You know, and George was always coming around, and he was younger. You know, so he was like a younger guy, and he played bassoon, and he played the clarinet, and then he played saxophone. You know, tenor, and then later he made his career playing soprano saxophone. But he was right there. You know, he was like the next generation down, and
right.
But he had that Philadelphia thing. He came up at that time where we had great teachers, and we had a great music system. I got to tell you, when there, you know, when you live a life, particularly when you live a long life, and you know, unfortunately, the way human beings go is, you know, we pass, we die, and some of us die mm-hmm. of old age, and then some of us die before our time. And this guy, it was such a terrible thing, you know. I mean, I know. You know, the God works, and, you know, it's hard to understand why
right.
happened. But, you know, we really felt that the clock was not right on George. It was just, it was of all
oh, yeah.
people, you know, it was not a good thing. But he was a tremendous musician. And George, I must say, a lot of people don't say it. And I don't see a lot of people, you know, acknowledging people that are do things first is not a fashionable thing these days in society. But George is really the guy, one of the very first smooth jazz artists, you know. Like, there would be no Kenny G or any of these other guys if it wasn't for George. You know, George,
I agree.
If you look at the dates on those records and really listen to what he was playing, and you listen to
mm-hmm.
the guys that
mm-hmm.
came after, you know, George was something. I love it when I sometimes travel around and I hear people, they'll play a George Howard record, like they'll play that Sade tune that he did, and then people will say, hey, did you know when this record came out? And, you know, and they give him some acknowledgement for being what he did, because he really set the pace. I mean, Grover was there before him. He played with Grover, so it was like Grover. And right around that time was really the beginnings on CTI Records and those artists. They really set the standard. And then it's a line that follows all the way up through the guys you see today. And
right.
you don't see a lot of guys acknowledge that sort of stuff. And not that they should. It's probably not necessary. But me, you know, I'm kind of old school, and I like to, you know, just keep it real and so people know
mm-hmm.
what happened, you know. But George was a tremendous artist and a great innovator, and he went way too fast.
Yeah,
I agree.
I totally
say,
agree.
I know from a guy one time that said that he heard me play something on YouTube. He asked me, he said, Dad, you sound a lot like George Howard. You know, what are you doing to your sound? He thought I was altering it in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, no, I just, you know, Grover and George and some of those other guys were just, you know, who I emulated
okay.
and kind of patterned myself after. And the song that you did with him, I loved. You know, the album, A Nice Place to Be, that you played on, is one of my
yeah,
favorites.
Yeah.
You know,
I used to play on
it when I was a kid.
I used to love it when he used to call me to play on his records. You know, he was really cool in the studio. You know, he was kind of like Quincy Jones was like that too, you know, like you walk in, you're not sure, am I going to a barbecue or are we recording or what? What's that? Way too cool up in here. Yeah, George was cool.
Oh, wow.
I miss him so much, man. I can't tell you how
oh,
much
yeah.
I miss George.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Well, thank
Thanks,
you, Tony.
Thank
all
you.
Right.
All right, Tony. Thank you.
All right.
And I wanted
okay.
to ask you about your band on this CD, the Sonic Pop brand. Could you tell us about your band on the CD?
Yeah, I have a Japanese piano player. She's a number one instrumental artist in Japan. Her name is Hiromi, and she's, you know, making a name for herself here in the States. and she's a tremendous, tremendous piano player. And she joins us. The main band is myself and a really talented young drummer named Ronald Bruner Jr. and a keyboardist, Israeli keyboardist named Ruslan. And we have, like I said, Hiromi plays, and then we have a guitarist named Charles Altura. And Lenny White helped me with this album, which was really nice to work with my old bandmate from RTF and Return to Forever, I mean. And, you know, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun putting that record together, you know, really a lot of fun.
All right. Well, let's listen to another song. The next one is I Want to Play for You Too. Tell me about this one.
Well, you know, I'm like, aside from all the things I do in music, you know, I do a lot of things, but I got a real Jones for 70s funk, you know, when it's coming from the bass, you know, like, you know, I'm like, you know, I remember I was there in the club first time I heard Grand Central Station with when Larry Graham, I remember I was there myself, Carlos Santana, and Lenny White. We walked in this club. Carlos had about 90 cassettes taped inside his coat. He was taping stuff. I always kid him now about that, but you know, the stuff was really, they were so funky, you know, and I just love that period, you know, because I can still see it. I love the hairdos, the clothes. It was really a cool time. So this song is kind of a throwback to that. You know, I pull out the talk box again, and the bass is definitely thumping on there. It's funky. It's a funky tune.
All right, from Stanley Clark's brand new CD, The Stanley Clark Band, this is I Want to Play for You Too.
I want to play for you.
Hello? 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 Hello?
Yes, Mr. Clark. That was the latest from Mr. Clark's new CD, the Stanley Clark Band. So, Mr. Clark, what do you have next upcoming on your schedule?
Well, I'm going to go play in, let's see, I got some shows, and I'm going to take off for a little while, and then I'm going to go to Senegal in Africa and play. The president of Senegal has a festival that he puts on, and I got this message that he wanted me to come over there and play with some other people, and so I'm going to go on the 18th of December, so that's going to be wild.
Okay, cool. Now,
right.
I just got a question for you, too. Scoring musical movies and TV shows, how did you get into that?
By accident. I was doing a TV show with a singer, Barry Manilow. He was doing like a jazz TV special, and he had a bunch of jazz musicians on his TV special. And the director of that show also directed a kids show called Pee-wee's Playhouse. And so he asked me, did I want to score some of that? Now, they had a bunch of other composers, but he wanted me to do a special show that they had trying to show, explain childbirth to kids, you know. And so I did the show, and I got a Emmy nomination. Like, I didn't really know what Emmys were, but it was pretty much a big deal. And then so I got an agent because I guess someone took notice of that, and then I kind of never looked back. I've done over 50 movies and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of television shows, and I just never looked back, you know. It's nice, you know. I really enjoy it. I love to turn on the TV because usually every night on one of those channels there's something that I've done on there, and so I was watching this crazy movie I did last night. It was movie called Undercover Brother that I did. It was crazy. I was like, man, this is crazy. But it was fun. It was a lot of fun to do it. You know, movies are like, you know, you usually spend about 3 months working on a movie, really. And so it's like, it becomes like a child to you, you know, and then it ends, and then it just kind of gets out there on its own. And so, you know, usually there's something there. I mean, I've done a lot of, I was fortunate that when I came up, some of the first directors I worked with was like John Singleton. I did his first three films. That trilogy of films was Boys in the Hood, Poetic Justice and Higher Learning. And that was a really nice ride, so to speak, there, you know, because John, it was beautiful because it was the reemergence of African-American films. And it was a lot of that happening, and people were writing really good stories. And there were, you know, Spike Lee was out there, Matty Rich was there, a bunch of others, and you know, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun, and you know, we keep moving on, and there's still films made, and you know, some are good, some are not, and, but keep moving forward.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, do they give you the script or anything to kind of base what you're going to play off of, or do you just play the music and then they just go with the movie and just insert your music as they feel?
No, there's definitely a science to this. I mean, usually what happens, I'll give you an example, like Boys in the Hood, for instance. John gave me the script. And I read the script, and the script, you know, definitely gave me a feeling of what he was trying to do. Mm-hmm. But then I went to the set. I went to the set many times to kind of see what he was doing. I met all the actors. It was really wild meeting Ice Cube when he was really young. What's funny, man, his case, he was sitting there, we were sitting in his trailer, he was telling me, like, you know, what he wanted to do. I'm going to do this, I'm going to be a movie star, I'm going to do this, I'm going to have my own record company, I'm going to do this. You know, he did it. It was really fun, you know. But, so you watch all that stuff, and then finally when they give you what's called the assembled footage, where they have some footage that's assembled, where you, it's somewhat the movie. It's maybe not the final editing, but it's some version of the film from the beginning to the end, so you have some kind of idea of what they're doing. And then in a lot of ways, the script goes away. You know, the footage becomes the Bible, you know, because the script is just there to, so you have an idea, you understand it from an analytical point of view, and you're reading, you know, what the writer is writing there, and it's, you, so you have an analytical view. But once it's on the screen and you have actors who have interpreted the words, it turns on a whole other thing. It's like life comes to the story. It's amazing. It really jumps in like a quantum leap as far as just emotion. And so there, at that point, that's when you start thinking about music. I mean, sometimes people write music from the script period, but usually not. It's usually as soon as you get the footage, you start writing. And then they're editing, and so you got to change. And this is kind of both things grow together till the very end when they finally have their final cut. And you have your final music, and then it mixes, and you know, and then it goes to the public, you know, and it's a wonderful process, because in the middle there, you really meet with people. I mean, to me, some of the smartest people in the world are film people, because they're dealing with the guts of life, you know, like they're basically, you know, recreating like what we do every day. And they try really hard to do it in a intelligent way, and sometimes not. I mean, sometimes they just want to try to tell a story. And so you have to have a lot of understanding about human emotion and the dynamics of life, you know, down in real detail, you know, to a sound, like what this sound, how this is going to affect the audience. Because, you know, in many ways, going to the movie is, you know, we allow ourselves to be manipulated in a way, nicely, and there's nothing wrong with that, because that's entertainment. And so the really good filmmakers really, really, really know how to do that, because they understand psychology and you know, human, you know, the dynamics of, you know, of we humans and just life in general. So it's a fun process, you know. It's really a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Clark, we really appreciate you taking the time to call in and speak with us.
Hey, man, it's been great.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. It's been great. I'm happy to talk to you guys, and please, I'll call in again at some point. And good luck to all you guys and ladies, and I wish you the best, you know.
Well, now, before I do let you go, though, let everyone know that you are touring and that you will be traveling. I have your schedule here in front of me. Tomorrow night, Friday, and Saturday, he will be at Catalina's Bar and Grill. Mm-hmm. And on Thursday the 21st in San Diego. And then Friday, you will be here in Las Vegas at the Aliante Casino. So I definitely have to come out and see you for sure.
Okay, cool.
You're going to be in Japan as for a while there. It looks like most of November and December you'll be in Japan. And even has dates scheduled throughout the new year. In February, he'll be in St. Louis for 4 nights. So, you know, go to his website, stanleyclark.com, and find out where he's going to be near you, and buy a ticket and go see him. Go see him in his band.
All right. Well, thanks so much for that. I appreciate that. And say hello to all the people, and adios. Everyone,
thank you so
much. All right.
Yes,
thank you too.
All right, have a good night.
Take care.
Bye-bye. All right, that was Stanley Clark. His brand new CD is called The Stanley Clark Band. You can pick that up on his website, stanleyclark.com, and on amazon.com. All right, so we had some problems in the beginning, and but they kind of worked themselves out. So I enjoyed that. I enjoyed talking to him. That was good.
Yeah. I mean, he's done so much in music and done so much to help, you know, kids learn about music. And I mean, he's just done everything. I mean, I'm like, you know, movie scores, you know, musically. I'm like, this guy's done it all, you know, so, yes.
Most definitely. And he's worked with some of the greats in the business as well. Horace Silver, Art Blakely, Dexter Gordon, Gato Barriari, Joe Henderson, Chick Corea, Pharoah Sanders, Gil Evans, Stan Getz, and Jean-Luc Ponty. So, man, he is a legend. I mean, at 25 years old, he was considered a legend. So he is a legend. He's been in the business for 39 years, and he's just an awesome, awesome bassist.
Yeah,
so again,
and he
check
keeps
out
it real, too. He keeps
yeah,
it real.
Definitely. Most definitely.
Yeah.
So let me thank the folks that called in. Thank you to D.A. Williams and to Tony Exum Jr. Thank you so much for calling in. Those in the chat room, thank you for joining us this evening. Casey and guests, Lori, Carol, Tony Exum, Al Winters, Be Encouraged, all of you all that joined us, thank you so much for tuning in. Tom will say tomorrow night. This coming weekend, we have on Talking Smooth Jazz. Saturday is a two-hour show with David Becker and Maurice Johnson. Sunday is Joe Johnson, and Monday is Mark Harper. So we hope that you will tune in for those upcoming shows. And, Mike, do you have anything
to
add?
I just have to add that I want to say continue to listen to the show and support all of these artists, you know, the major artists, any indie artists and everything. And so we're going to try to get all of the artists that you guys want us to interview on. And so if there's anybody that you feel, you know, warrants exposure or something like that, I said hit me and turn up on Facebook, and we'll try to contact that artist and get them on the show to get them some exposure, because, like I said, we need to really expose this great music to the people out here, because we just lost another smooth jazz station in Norfolk, Virginia, 2 days ago. So mm-hmm. They switched formats to AC contemporary, you know, as usual. So I think we're down to like maybe 19 or 18 stations left in the country. So we definitely need to support all these artists as much as we can to try to keep this genre alive, definitely.
Yes, for sure, for sure. All right, well, that is our show for this evening. Our thanks again to Stanley Clark for joining us and gracing our little show with his presence. We truly appreciate it. So thank you again so much, Mr. Clark, for that. And until we talk to you guys this weekend, you have been listening to Talking Smooth Jazz with your host, the Jazz Queen.
And Mike Reynolds.
And we look forward to talking smooth jazz with you this weekend. Until then, keep it smooth.